Hello, it's Richard from Fringe Guru again, and I'm just waiting for the bus, which is going to take me to my next show. Now, I'm cheating slightly with today's Fringe Curiosity, because for the first time, and probably the only time this year, I'm dabbling in the official festival. I'm going to see Before I Sleep. It's a much talked about show by Dream Think Speak. I don't know a great deal about it. They've kept a lid on the secrets very well, but I understand that it's highly interactive and probably a little strange, so it sounds very much like my kind of thing. Now, of course, I won't be able to record in there, but I'll let you know what I made of it straight after I come out of the show. In the meantime, here's an interview that I recorded yesterday when the weather was a whole lot sunnier than it is today. It's with a gentleman called A.B. Philbin Bowman. He's a comedian and, as you'll hear, probably one of the more controversial of the comedians that you'll see at this year's Fringe. Now, I'm very much learning the ropes here and I didn't choose a great spot to do the interview, so you'll hear there's quite a lot of wind at the beginning, but do stick with it, it gets better and it's very much worth listening to. I always like talking to Fringe performers because they always have such energy and enthusiasm about their shows. And in AB's case, that's crossed with a fair level of political activism as well. I'm sitting today just by the fountain, right in the heart of Brighton, and I'm with AB Philbin Bowman, who is got a very comprehensive programme of shows at this year's Fringe. Amy, why don't you just start by quickly running through, briefly if you would, what you've brought down here.
Very kind of you, yes indeed. Okay, well, the first show I did, and it's finished now, but there's actually an extra date that's been added because it sold out, it's called Jesus the Guantanamo Years. And the basic idea of the show is that Jesus Christ comes back to Earth, but he stopped at US immigration because he's the bearded Middle Eastern man who wants to die as a martyr, and he's just walked out of a cave. And that's on the 3 and 10. It was on... It's now finished, but it'll be on again on the 22nd, which is a Saturday at 8.30, upstairs at 3 and 10. The second show, which I'm doing this week and started last Friday, is called Eco-Friendly Jihad. And the idea there is that we could probably radically reduce carbon emissions if we all joined Al-Qaeda. And I know that sounds kind of radical, but if you think about it, the major causes of climate change are airlines, oil companies, rich Western governments, and overpopulation. And Al-Qaeda has a pretty comprehensive plan to deal with all four of those. And that's at upstairs at 3 and 10 tonight, Monday, and next on Wednesday as well at 10 o'clock. And then the third show is starting on Friday, I think it's the 14th, which is called Sex, Lies and the KKK. And I'm still writing that one, but it's basically about the fact that when Barack Obama was elected, I was working in Irish radio, and I thought it would be interesting on the night to interview the Ku Klux Klan, because we had no budget, we couldn't compete with BBC and Fox and CNN and all these people, but I thought the one thing we can do is talk to these people who, let's be honest, have been trying to fight this day for over 100 years, and sort of sexuality and whether we're all a bit bisexual and whether we're all really monogamous or not. So all of that sort of comes in somewhere in Sex, Lies and the KKK. And I'm doing a couple of other things, actually. I'm doing some workshops in the Brighton Friends Meeting House, which are on basically one-man shows and comedy, and basically I work with whoever turns up, so if people come along and they want us to get into comedy for the first time, I'll do that with them. If they want to write a one-man show and learn how to market their art and stuff, I can do that with them. And the final thing I'm doing is a once-off thing with Magnus Bettner, who is Sweden's biggest comedian, amazing guy. I'm really honoured to be working with him, and we're doing a once-off show called Bisexual Atheists, which is only £5, and it's 1 o'clock on a Monday lunchtime, so if you're feeling a bit blue on Monday the 17th, head down to, I think it's the Temple we're in, doing just a 55-minute show. So you'll get in there in your lunch hour, you'll get out, have a sneaky pint, and there should be some great comedy from myself and Magnus Bettner.
Okay, well, I guess what we can tell from that rundown is that you're not a man who's scared of controversy. And I've seen the first of those, Jesus the Guantanamo Years, where you actually come onto stage wearing a crown of thorns, as well as an orange jumpsuit. So let's talk through that. I mean, are you deliberately going for shock?
Well, actually, I said in one of my shows, that in the Eco-Friendly Jihad show, I say, look, at the very beginning, if you think that I'm just trying to be controversial, you know, that's just not true. I mean, if I wanted to be controversial, I would have called one of my shows Confessions of a Gay Iranian Abortionist. And I didn't. And actually, to be honest, I think there's nothing more boring than comedians or anyone trying to be controversial just for the sake of being controversial. I actually think that's kind of lazy and silly, and if you've got nothing to say, then just shut up and go away. The thing about this festival is I'm actually kind of showing off, essentially, well, showing off is a good word for it, showcasing, shall we say, about four or five years' work. I mean, I first wrote the Jesus Show in kind of late 2005 and put it on professionally in 2006. And Eco-Friendly Jihad I've been playing with the last couple of years, and then this SLK show is quite new. So, I mean, I do definitely look at controversial themes, but I have really thought about them, and I have done an awful lot of research. And I think there's something important. I'm trying to say something kind of important in each one of them. I mean, I can talk about what I'm trying to say in each of them if you want. The Jesus one essentially is saying that Guantanamo Bay is kind of un-Christian, and Jesus himself said, "What you do to the least of these, you do also to me." So I think for Christians to kind of set up a torture camp is kind of ironic and rather stupid, and rather un-Christian and rather un-American. The Eco-Friendly Jihad show is about trying to address something which I think nobody wants to talk about, which is that we all want to be good, and we all want to save the planet, and we all want to, you know, end poverty and stop climate change. But the trouble is that while we're all in favour of peace and prosperity and protecting the planet, we kind of lose sight of the fact that peace and prosperity generally lead to a bigger population, and that generally leads to more pollution, and that's what's destroying the planet. So the real problem is that we have 6.5 billion people in the world, and that's kind of why we have climate change, why we have global warming. And, you know, it's a horrible thing to say, but, you know, one of the ways that human population is kept under control is by poverty and disease and war, all of which are horrendous things, but there is a contradiction that nobody really wants to address. And you know, if we keep thinking that we can, you know, if we end poverty tomorrow, that would be lovely. But if everyone drives cars and flies planes, we'll have no oil in 10 years, and we'll probably have a global famine. So it's trying to address that contradiction that I feel no one wants to talk about. And the Sex, Lies and KKK show is about sort of more personal lies about racism and sexual, what our actual sexual nature is and what our actual response to race is versus what we're told it should be, and trying to talk about some of those things. And I think those are inherently interesting, and yes, they are controversial, but I never seek to just lazily go, you know. I just don't think there's any point in that. I think as an artist, you owe it to yourself to actually, if you're going to talk about something really serious, to A, do your homework, and B, have something worth saying. And I hope I do.
Amy gets a gold star for carrying on talking during that answer while the waters from the fountain were blowing across the bench that we're sitting on. You can probably hear it. It's quite a windy day. Aren't you dissembling a little bit there, though? You know perfectly well that if you put a picture of yourself dressed as Jesus on a flyer, you're going to get audience into your show just because you've done that. Can you really say that everything you're doing is credible?
I'm not saying it's not controversial, because I think it is. But I'm saying that there's a point to the controversy. I mean, if I said, "Oh, look at me, I'm Jesus in Guantanamo, ha ha ha, isn't this hilarious?" and I jumped around for an hour in a jumpsuit going, "Isn't this really funny?" that would be kind of silly and demeaning, and I think it would be demeaning to people who are in Guantanamo and demeaning to people who take religion seriously. I think I'm actually making a legitimate point about Christianity and about belief and about the people who set up Guantanamo and call themselves Christians, and about the hypocrisy of that. And I think that the idea of Jesus being stopped at US immigration actually kind of crystallises the hypocrisy of the Bush administration and what it stood for. And I've actually made this point to a lot of Muslims, that Muslims, in some contexts, have gotten angry about religious comedy. And I say to sort of moderate Muslims, say, look, you know, religious comedy is a multifaceted thing, and you know, I can't think of a better way to parody Guantanamo and to really, you know, mock it and insult it and explain what's wrong with it than through religious comedy. And so, if you're against Guantanamo, which the vast majority of Muslims are, as indeed most non-Muslims that I know are, then, you know, giving people like me the freedom to do this show and to talk about this could potentially be kind of an effective thing. I mean, I did the show in America and I did the show in Pakistan, and in both cases I had Christians and Muslims coming up to me afterwards going, "Thank you for depicting Jesus as a funny, charismatic guy who wouldn't really like all these fundamentalists who do stuff in his name." And I think there's a serious point there. So I think that justifies the controversy that I am certainly courting with the image and with the title.
So I've got to pick up there on the performance in Pakistan. Yes. I've heard from other comedians who have gone there and have found it, in some cases, quite a frightening environment to perform in. How was it for you?
Well, bizarrely enough, I was there during the 2007 state of emergency, just after Benazir Bhutto returned to the country, and there was a car bomb which she survived, thankfully. And then 10 weeks later, as people will remember, there was another car bomb where she was killed. And I was there in actually the middle of that 10-week period. I was there in like week 5 of that. Obviously didn't know what was going to happen 5 weeks since. So the really strange thing for me was that people were actually being locked up in Pakistan and being sort of put on... Basically, journalists and lawyers were being locked up and told, you know, being told you're a terror suspect, or under anti-terrorism laws, we can't give you a fair trial, and being put away. And I thought, there's a real parallel here with Guantanamo, which is what I was talking about in the show. And at the same time, I didn't want to get the people I was working for in trouble. What I found amazing about playing in Pakistan, and they were the best three gigs I've ever done in my life, was that when the audience totally loved the stuff about religious fundamentalism and how that's just a misunderstanding of religion and how you should just laugh and enjoy, celebrate creation. They loved all that stuff.
And is it really true that you've been banned by the DUP?
Well, the absolute truth is there was a councillor in the DUP who was asked for a statement by a Belfast newspaper and said, this is blasphemous, it's in very bad taste, I think people shouldn't go to it, I would not go to it. And we had a row on the radio about it. And I said, you know, okay, you think this is blasphemous. Well, I've got to ask you, do you think it's more blasphemous? Which do you think would offend God more? Me telling jokes on stage or the Americans torturing his children? And then I realised in the middle of all of this that an Ulster Protestant was attacking me for dressing up in orange and talking about Jesus. And I thought, that is my favourite thing that's happened to me ever. You can't spell stand-up comedy without DUP.
Okay, I don't want to spend the whole time talking about this one show, but I did promise that I'd give you an opportunity to respond to my review. So just to cut a long story short, what I said was that I felt that during the Guantanamo section, although it was Jesus who was in the camp, it could actually have been anybody.
Well, I actually think the review was very, very sensitive and very intelligent. I could see you'd really thought about the show, and I really respected that, and that's why I retweeted it immediately and went, look, guys, look at this review. I think it's kind of interesting. The one point sort of theologically I would make about Jesus being in Guantanamo in that section is that to me the whole point of Jesus as a sort of theological figure is that he is a man. He's not Thor. He's not some, like, thunderbolt hurling, you know, god with amazing pecs and abs who's invincible in war. He is a man who suffers. And so for me, I felt that when I was writing about Guantanamo, I had a duty to depict him as a man, just like all the other men who were there who are suffering. And I thought that to have a sort of fantastical narrative where Jesus is, like, turning water into wine all the time and, you know, pulling tricks and feeding people with you know, loaves and fishes would have kind of demeaned what's really going on in Guantanamo. So for that reason, I depicted him as a man suffering, and I felt that was in keeping with a certain Christian tradition. But at the same time, as I say, I respect your right to have a different opinion.
Okay, so let's move on to eco-friendly jihad now. I mean, I thought it couldn't get any more controversial, and then you throw Al-Qaeda into the mix. A continuation of the Guantanamo tale?
Well, funnily enough, I mean, it's not because it's me as AB doing a comedian talking about my life and my struggles to try and save the world. But funnily enough, it actually starts up at the point when the Jesus Show ended, which is that Jesus Show ends on an environmental note, as you'll remember, about saying that the planet is sort of doomed. In 50 years, we'll have no polar ice caps and no rainforests and no oil. But on the good side, in 50 years' time, we'll be at least in our 70s. So we're the only people in history who get contraception and iPods and cheap flights and an ozone layer, which is pretty great. And I sort of start off the eco-friendly show with that sort of joke and that idea, and realising that I find that very funny. But if you want to have children, it's not quite so amusing. And so it's a discussion about, you know, the environmental impacts that we have and so on. The weirdest moment in terms of controversy with that show was in January when Osama bin Laden released a statement saying the US is to blame for climate change. And I thought, he's calling for eco-friendly jihad. I really wasn't expecting that at all. So that was a bit frightening, and I actually had a moment of going, this has just gone too beyond a joke. Of course, the one advantage is that having done all the research into Guantanamo into Al-Qaeda and climate change, I was able to immediately think, hang on a second, if he's really serious about reducing carbon emissions, he really got to stop bombing public transport, because, I mean, that's not going to get people out of their cars. So I think Al-Qaeda's actual environmental credentials are pretty pathetic, and I expose this in the show. But really the reason I bring in the whole conceit about joining Al-Qaeda is because I think we're very wishy-washy in our commitment to the environment. We say, oh yeah, we must do more, we must, you know, buy some organically, locally grown potatoes in Tesco and bring a canvas bag. But we don't really think about the fact that we drive all the time, or that, I mean, that I've flown to Pakistan to do my show, you know. That has a pretty terrible environmental impact. Or that we have children, which has a pretty big environmental impact as well. So I think it's about trying to say, well look, this isn't about making small little changes in your life. It's actually a kind of a very radical do or die decision that as a collective community we have to face. And if we don't face it, you know, we're kind of condemning ourselves and our kids to a very different future. And if we choose that, and if we consciously go, this is what we want, we are okay with that, we want to fly now and we don't care about the future, that's fine. But I think we have to be honest about it. And I think honesty is a really sort of central point that I come back to again and again as I don't mind if we do this. We can choose to be horrendous people, but let's be honest about it. I think it sort of ties in my mind to the addictive nature of human beings, that all the things we get addicted to are things like pornography or cocaine or sugar or alcohol or drugs. All of them give you a short-term pleasure rush and cause long-term suffering, and yet we get drawn in again and again to things like gambling and sex and so on. And I wonder if we would have a population problem if you had to go through childbirth immediately and then wait 9 months for an orgasm. I suspect you wouldn't. And similarly with carbon, you know, if I fly to South America tomorrow, I get to go to Brazil, which is great, and the stuff that the pain is felt in 50 years' time by some poor guy in Bangladesh. And I think people are very bad at making those kind of long-term informed decisions. I think that's just how we've evolved, so that's unfortunate.
Okay, that was A.B. Philbin Bowman, a man with lots of names and lots to say. Let's just quickly run through his shows. So, Jesus, the Guantanamo Years, the first one we talked about. You can see that again on Saturday the 22nd, that's a week on Saturday. Eco-Friendly Jihad is on tomorrow, probably today by the time that you hear this, Wednesday at 10 p.m. Sex, Lies and the Ku Klux Klan is the show that we didn't talk about that much, because as he acknowledged, it's not quite finished yet, but it will be finished by this Friday. And finally, Bisexual Atheists, that's next Monday the 17th, and that's at a different venue, that's at the Temple Bar out towards Hove. So let's talk about Before I Sleep. Well, it's a difficult one to discuss, because there's a big sign as you come out of the venue which asks you not to give away too many of its secrets. But it's public knowledge that it's about Chekhov, based on Chekhov, so I can tell you that it's about society going through change, about the promise of progress, and about the decay of the old world. It's an impressive performance. It's a massive space they're using, and they filled it up with installations, with little theatrical pieces performed by individual actors or by groups of actors. You're never quite sure what's going to come next. For a lot of the performance, you're free to move about more or less at will. Other bits are more controlled. Now, I think that the greatest strength of this is also its greatest weakness, that you are guided quite forcefully through the space, and that makes it fairly accessible. But I also had the sense from time to time that I was at an art gallery. You know, that feeling that you sometimes get when you're at an art gallery and you don't quite understand the work on display, but you have to stand and look at it for a certain length of time so that it seems that you're taking it in. You know, I felt like that from time to time as I moved around the space. Also, there's a big interactive section in the middle, which is funny and well executed, but it's based on an experience which is not novel, which we all have from time to time, and which, when it happens to us, is actually quite annoying. And I wasn't convinced that the interactivity, the freshness, was quite enough to get past the annoying nature of the dialogue that's going on. So I've got those reservations, but at the same time, there were strong messages which came back, were brought back very ably, recurring themes. Sometimes they recurred a little bit too often. I wanted to shout out, yes, I get it. But on the whole, very well done, very well presented. So it's worth an hour of your time, an hour, a quarter, whatever it takes you to get around. It's certainly worth £15, and it's a great introduction to the genre. It might perhaps leave you ready and wanting something a bit less control, a bit more raw. The sort of stuff that you would in fact find on The Fringe. So I shall be back on The Fringe Beat tomorrow. Until then, good night.